BBC WM, the Home Secretary Theresa May has said the government will continue to support the families of the Hillsborough disaster while prosecutors decide whether to bring criminal charges. She described yesterday's inquest finding that the 96 Liverpool fans were unlawfully killed as of great public importance, but said it was not the end of the process. Labour's Shadow Home Secretary Andy Burnham, who supported the families' campaign, said they'd received justice at last.
It took too long in coming, and the struggle for it took too great a toll on too many. Now those responsible must be held to account for 96 unlawful deaths and a 27-year cover-up.
Now, Professor John Ashton was at Hillsborough for that game. He helped some of the casualties. He's with me in the studio. He's been in Birmingham today. John, how are you?
All right, thank you. I've been busy, but OK. It's a very strange 24 hours, but very important.
Just take us back to that day and where you were and what happened as far as your involvement's concerned.
Well, I'm a Liverpool supporter since I was a kid and was at the game with two of my sons, 14, 16-year-old and nephew Carl, 22. We came, you know, to the ground in the normal way, beautiful sunny April morning, you know, festival atmosphere, and then hit this seething mass of people outside the turnstiles that... No control, no attempt made to get people into orderly lines, check tickets outside and anything like that. And it was really unpleasant. So I wasn't prepared to go in through the turnstiles at that point. Went and sat on the wall by the river. But the boys went ahead of me and went in.
They went into the Leppings Lane end?
We're at Leppings Lane end, yeah. I mean, we had seats upstairs this year, in 89. 88, we'd been there and we'd been standing in the corner at that end. Mm. And it had been bad then, but they'd been organised then. Anyway, the crush suddenly disappeared and I went in, presented my ticket, went and bought a programme. And then the first I realised that there was something catastrophically wrong was a man came rushing up to a policeman who was by the programme cell and said, "You've got to do something, there's kids dying in there." So I sprinted up the stairs to get to where my boys were.
Because you were in the seats above.
We were in the seats immediately above the pen where it all happened. We had very good seats, would have done, immediately behind the goal.
Because people will have seen pictures of people actually clambering up.
And when I got up there, I couldn't make way down the aisle because it was full of people and I had to clamber over the seats. We were in the second or third row. Mm. But my nephew Carl was at the front helping to pull people up over the front. I went and, you know, joined my two lads. This was just after 3 o'clock. The game had stopped by the time I got there. And at that point, I saw lifeless people being brought out into the six-yard box and the penalty area. And I said to one of my boys, "I think that person's dead." And I think that one, maybe, because completely lifeless, flat people laid out, and a third one. And then, you know, this is all going to be about 20 past three. And then there was a tannoy request for medics and nurses to go and help. So I went off down the stairs again to the area behind Leppings Lane by the tunnel, at the back of the tunnel, and presented myself to a policeman.
Because you were a doctor.
Because I'm a doctor. And I said, "Who do I report to? What do I do?" He said, "I've got no idea." And nobody had any idea. It was just mayhem. There were no medics there, no St. John's, nothing. The police had begun to take people outside. There was only at that time, I understand later, you know, one ambulance there. There was another several ambulances came at about 4:15.
Yeah.
But the police were taking people out. They weren't prioritising them. So I, you know, my medical training kicked in and I imposed and initiated a triaging system of only walking wounded did not need to go to hospital. You know, and people who were dead did not need to go to hospital. And the people who needed to go to hospital were those who really would benefit from urgent medical attention at the hospital. So that's what we did. I was joined by another doctor and some nurses.
Were you on the pitch? Were you outside?
No, behind the left.
Behind the stand?
Behind the stand, in that apron area behind the tunnel. And, you know, we worked away there for about an hour until it, you know, it was all over. And then one of the policemen asked me to certify dead, and two doctors... We worked from one end and the other end of a line of dead people against the fence, and I certified six. I think he certified nine. I think there were 15 altogether.
Just lined up there?
Yeah, lined up there. And had to use impromptu death certificates using pages torn out of the policeman's notebook, pinned to the clothing with safety pins, you know, certified time of death, my name, date. there was only one of the six that I certified who had any identification on, because it was before the days of mobile phones, it was before the day of bank cards and so on. And then I, you know, when it was all calmed down after 5 o'clock, I went along to the gymnasium to see what was going on, because I'd heard that the, you know, the dead were being taken there. And the gym seemed to have been a police HQ for the game. The first things I noticed was that there, along the wall in the gym, there was a gallery of photographs of Liverpool supporters that were regarded as troublemakers, potential scallies and thieves and robbers and all this kind of thing. It gave me a creepy feeling about the mindset of the day, which, you know, I sort of registered at the time. That gallery, that sort of rogues gallery, was taken down later on in the evening and replaced with Polaroids of the dead. But just after that, at about 5:30 or thereabouts, anybody who wasn't a policeman was shifted out of the gym. The police were assembling there. The doors were closed. And that was when, you know, I think the conspiracy started. I think the debrief, the formulation of a narrative that was fed into Margaret Thatcher and Bernard Ingham, her press secretary, when they visited the following morning. Popper, the coroner, was there in the evening as well. He decided to take no evidence after 3:15. And then, you know, from London, what we know now, if you look in the records online, you'll see that there's a series of letters went from different government departments in Whitehall to the coroner, to Popper, and from the Trent Regional Health Authority and Mersey Regional Health Authority as well, praising the emergency response, using the same adjectives and the same phrases, that for me is salient fact, which I think the spotlight needs to go on now at this stage when we look at how that conspiracy was orchestrated. But, today, yesterday, is about the families, it's about the possibility now to begin grieving. Their grieving's been on hold for 27 years. They can now begin to grieve. And so it's still going to be tough for them. You know, these people have been incredibly strong and they've kept going. They're exhausted. You know, they're not young anymore, most of the parents, obviously, of the younger ones. But there's another 12 months to go before the Crown Prosecution Service decides what they're going to do, and then there'll be trials after that, hopefully. So this is going to go on for more years, you know. But the emotional work can start now. The emotional grieving, which, you know, we've been through, all of us have been through grieving, and, you know, normally it starts straight away and hopefully lasts, you know, a year or so when you lose a close one. They've had it on hold for 27 years. They can start grieving now. So it's a very strange mood in Liverpool at the moment. I've just come down from Liverpool this morning and I've been there. And, you know, there's such a strange concoction of emotions around. You know, there's a exhilaration, there's sadness, a lot of tears, a lot of sense of solidarity and something achieved, working together, incredible working together, lots of people involved, the local MPs, Andy Burnham, the local press on Merseyside. You know, also Kenny Dalglish went to, I think, all the funerals, you know.
Yeah.
And then he walked away from the club. He couldn't cope. You know, he's been a big hero. So I think what I'm saying is that it's a sort of biblical sort of thing at the moment. It's like, you know, they've been in the wilderness for 27 years, and it's like the parting of the Red Sea. You begin to see an end to it now. You know, deliverance kind of sense of this. If you can imagine the burden of 27 years, imagine, I was with Barry Devonside this morning, his only child, his son, died. You know, I was with Barry doing an interview in Liverpool, and, you know, I've got sons, and I just can't contemplate what it must have been like to have lost a son under those circumstances.
No.
So, you know, our feelings are with them. But, you know, I'm looking ahead and saying, if anything comes out of this, hopefully it'll be that debate and that understanding of what needs to happen next, to have a moral compass for these folk who won't own up. Even today in the Liverpool Echo, the police are not owning up. They're not putting their hands up, even now. If you read the words they've issued since yesterday, they're mealy-mouthed. It's not good enough. You know, we need people to have some humility, to have some humanity, to hold up the mirror. And, you know, in old-fashioned words, really, seeking salvation for what they did wrong, because they're not doing it yet.
Well, there still might be some
prosecutions to follow.
Yeah.